Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford, and I'll be taking your calls and answering your questions for the next hour or so. Lisa is here with us, screening calls and keeping things light and fun. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in and ask your question. You can even bring us your opinion. It's up to you. This is your show. You can ask questions about fuel mileage, tires, engine, EGR, aerodynamics, truck specking, maintenance, taxes, financial planning, getting started as an owner-operator, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember to talk to Kevin. Press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your calls. You know you'd rather talk to me anyway. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Lisa is here screening your calls. And boy, the phone lines are filling up fast. I've got a special guest with me tonight, and it's always fun to have Bruce Mallinson from Pittsburgh Power with us. We're going to get to him in just a minute. If you're listening to us online and you want to join the call, you might want to do it quick because the lines are filling up. The number to dial, 347-884-8327. It looks like we've got a lot of questions tonight, so I'm going to jump right into it and get started with Bruce. Bruce, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin. How are you?
I'm doing great tonight. You know, it's crazy. We see each other all over the country. We spend we spend 3 or 4 days together in Las Vegas. We spend a week together in Kansas City. And the only way I can actually talk to you is to get you on the show.
Yeah, you were rather busy in the evenings in Kansas City, and so was I out in the parking lot.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wasn't nearly as busy as you were. I was telling people you were like the Energizer Bunny. You were going all day, and you were out in the parking lot all night. And
that first night, it was 11:23.
Was it really that late?
11:23, and we just forced ourselves to quit because we knew we had to be at the show in the morning.
Yeah, you know what, though? I saw so many. And it was hot out. It was, you know, I saw people, and after being in the seminar all day long, and then they were out in the parking lot, and they were hot and sweaty and dirty, but everybody was smiling.
We did have a good time out there with Mike Beckett and myself and the owner-operators, and Francisco was helping people, and another father and son team jumped in, and I mean it was really good to see the camaraderie and to see everybody helping everyone. It was a lot of fun.
It was. I was surprised. I kind of knew what was going on out there, and we had to work on some filming stuff inside. And when I did finally get a chance to go out, I was just amazed at, like you said, the camaraderie. Everybody was helping each other, and if somebody knew a little more, they were teaching somebody else. And there were some people there who, you know, really haven't done a lot as far as maintenance and mechanical stuff, and they were getting in and getting their hands dirty and really having a good time with it.
Right. It turned out like I thought it was going to. I just wish it wouldn't have been quite so hot.
I know. It was hot out there. It was brutally hot.
95 degrees on top of black asphalt. It's rather warm.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. It was, we really appreciate it. We have had nothing but positive comments about, you know, the experience, and people have just told us how great it was to be out in the parking lot with you and how much they got a chance to learn, and it was just a great event. But I mean, it is kind of crazy. We spent the whole week there, and I bet you and I didn't get a chance to talk for 10 minutes the whole week.
No, we did not. But, hey, I got an interesting email today. Well, I don't know when I got it because I got it on August 6th. I'm so far behind I haven't answered many emails for the past 6 weeks or so because I can't get time during the day. And in the summertime, I have things to do in the evenings that I don't spend my time indoor. But, you know, we talked about drive shafts one time here not too long ago and how a drive shaft in a semi-truck is only good for 500,000 miles, just like a crankshaft damper.
Right.
And do you mind if I read you this one email today?
No, go ahead.
Okay. It says, after reading, this is from a father and son team. They each have a truck. It is from David and Melvin Nyhart, in case they're listening. After reading your recent article on drive shafts, my father and I decided with 6,680,000 miles in our trucks, we should listen to your advice. Previously, we have followed your advice and replaced crankshaft dampers and installed mercury-filled balancer on both our Cummins ISXs. The results were amazing. From now on, every truck we own will get a new damper and balancer at 500,000 miles. We had wanted to get our drive shaft done at Western Truck Parts in Denver, but we are not in that area very often. In Columbus, Ohio, there is a shop that came highly recommended, Driveline 1. They quoted $1,100 and came in at that price, even though we had to have a new slip shaft for the rearmost shaft. Items replaced included carrier bearing, slip joint, all U-joints, and the shaft was machined for straightness. A note about slip joints. If you have one, it needs to be disassembled and greased every 6 months or it will seize, which is what had happened to ours. Now, I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
Oh. We have just finished our first trip from Ohio to Missouri, and driveline vibration and noise are gone. Not just improved, but gone. We are going to install Balance Masters drive shaft balancers next time we're at home. The United States Post Office was unable to get the balancers there on time for the drive shaft. And so then they go on to talk about you have to measure the diameter of the drive shaft when you call Balance Masters and so forth. But it says, my father and I wish to say thank you for your article and the fantastic phone support we get anytime we call Pittsburgh Power. It is our belief that you saved us from a broken drive shaft and a tow bill. To anyone that doubts your advice, every part you sell works as advertised. We have had all your parts on two trucks now, and the results are fantastic. Our 2007 Kenworth T2000 with ISX gives us 8-plus mile per gallon, even running at 65. Our 2005 Volvo 670 just set the record, 8.54 mile per gallon. We track every tank in fuel gauges.
Wow. Wow, what a great email.
Yeah, I mean, I was thrilled. I only got to answer about four or five of them today, and that was one of them. And it was a very hectic day. Our shop was very full and getting the trucks out for the weekend. And it was 6 o'clock tonight, and I thought, gee, that was nice icing on the cake for the day.
Yeah, you know, and I know how busy you've been, and we've been busy, and I'm behind on emails, and I, you know, try to keep up with phone calls. And sometimes you just get so tired. And we went, you know, Lisa's been, was really busy all year with truck shows. And we still have one more coming up. And then we can kind of take a breather for the year. But you get to a point and you think, you know, do I really need to work this hard? And then you get an email like that and it kind of recharges you again. And you remember why you do all this stuff.
That's exactly correct.
So it really is.
One thing I wanted to say, we are not removing EGRs yet from ISXs and DDEC 5s. We are from DDEC 4s.
Okay.
The only EGR that we can remove is from a DDEC 4.
And that's the fresh air bypass,
right? We're taking it completely off, or we leave it on, but it's we can either remove it or we can leave it on, but it won't be functional. Only on the DDEC 4. As far as the DDEC 5 and the ISX, the fresh air system, I want to do some more work on that. Sid will be back to work on Monday, and we're going to attack that problem again.
Okay. Okay, got it. So on the 4, you can disable it completely.
Right.
Okay, got it.
We change the turbo,
okay.
Change the manifold. We either put a plug in it or we weld it shut, the tube that brings the EGR over.
Got it. Okay.
You know,
excellent.
I noticed something this week. I was studying the EGR on an ISX. The air going into the air compressor is after the EGR comes into the intake. Why do we want to put EGR soot into our air compressor, into our air tanks?
Yeah, why do we want to put EGR and all that soot anywhere? But you're right, that seems like almost a design flaw. Why would we do that?
And then the guy said, well, you know what's amazing? Sometimes the back end in my airbags, my rear suspension seems to run real rough, and sometimes it runs smooth. Now, he said, do you think the soot could be getting in there and plugging up the valves?
Well,
And so this is just a thought. I'm not saying that this is. I have to take the intake apart and make sure that there's not a way that they're blocking the EGR soot from getting into the air compressor. But, boy, when you look at it, the way it's set up, it looks like it's going straight in there.
Well, if it is, that would be interesting. If it is, it would almost, you'd want to take apart certain parts of the air system and see if we're getting soot in there.
Right. But we'll talk about that more whenever I have some more information on that.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. You and I could easily spend the rest of the hour talking to you because we haven't had a chance to talk, and there's so much I want to catch up on, but we've got a lot of questions, so why don't we get to some?
Okay.
All right. Let's start off in Georgia. Rick, welcome to the program.
Mr. Rutherford, how you doing, sir?
Doing good. What's on your mind tonight?
Thanks, Ms. Lisa. Mr. Bruce, Kevin, I told you yesterday I was going to get a cylinder cutout test done today because I have that problem with when I have my Jake on, I'm getting black smoke coming out my stacks.
Right.
Well, the cylinder cutout test came back. Everything was okay. They found no problems with that. I just wanted to run it by Bruce and see if anything stood out to him.
On which engine?
C15 6NZ. I mean, if under pressure, no smoke, runs beautiful, but whenever I have the Jake on in the high stage, I get smoke coming out my stacks, black smoke.
Well, I want to congratulate you for knowing which Caterpillar you had. That impresses me. I like that.
Thank you.
Hey, Bruce, just a side note. This got how many miles on it?
970-something thousand.
Yeah, and I looked at the oil sample last night. This is a super clean engine. Oil sample still looks fantastic.
Good, good. So black smoke
when the
Jake breaks on.
Yes, sir. And I tried something today by using it in the low stage, and I actually didn't see any smoke coming out while it was in the low stage, but as soon as you put it on in the high stage, it starts coughing out black smoke.
This calls for a conference call, and I want you to call us on Tuesday at my shop, and I'm going to put you on a speaker, and I'm going to get Gary, Pete, Sid, and I on this call, and we'll hash this out and come up with an answer.
Good deal. I'd really appreciate that.
So I'm not sure if I know how to answer that right now, what would be causing that. And is it real heavy black smoke, or is it just a haze?
Not heavy. It's noticeable because, I mean, I always pay attention to stuff like that, but it's not like a heavy, thick smoke, but you could definitely see it.
Let's think about something here. Fuel, unburned fuel will be black. Now, white smoke is what you get if you have a cracked injector tip. You'll get white, but you're getting black. It sounds to me like you're getting some fuel into the cylinders while the Jake brake is on. But then,
okay,
let's go back to the older mechanical engines. They were still putting fuel into the cylinders while the Jake brake was on. But then again, we never really paid. We had a little bit of smoke coming out the stacks on mechanical engines. So
we had smoke all the time on mechanical engines, so you didn't pay as much attention to it. But my thought was, if there's smoke, there has to be fuel, and there shouldn't be any fuel whatsoever in the cylinder.
No, there shouldn't be, because your foot's off the throttle, the Jake's on,
right,
the ECM should cut off all fuel going in.
Sounds
are these
like
the original injectors by any chance?
I definitely know one has been changed since I had the truck. I'm not sure about the rest of them, but I know I did one since I had the truck.
Yeah. Well, I would say that if it still has a lot of the original injectors, maybe some fuel's getting in. It's not going to hurt anything, and
okay,
I certainly wouldn't go out and buy new injectors just to eliminate that, because hey, within the next couple hundred thousand, you may be rebuilding it.
Yeah, and as far as the oil sample goes, there was zero trace of fuel in there. So if the injectors are allowing some fuel in while the Jake's on, that's the only problem. They're not leaking at all or streaming or anything, or we'd see it in the sample.
Right. And you know, the 6NZ is a keeper. You want to keep that engine for a long, long time, so.
Oh yeah, I've been listening to you, man, and God forbid, I mean, eventually I'm going to have to get into it, but I plan to get into it and get into it and get into it as long as I can.
There you go.
Hey, Kevin, I had an easy... I'm sorry?
Make sure you balance the rods and the pistons. I was in a 2007 Kenworth today, beautiful T600 with an MXS Acer Cat, and this thing just shook. We put a fast system on. It only has 360,000 on it. We put a damper and a balancer on to try to cure it, but it's internal in the engine, and I know it's the rods and pistons being out of balance. I felt bad for the guy, because the only way he's going to cure it is to take the engine apart.
Isn't that just a shame? So what's going to happen, really, financially, you just have to live with it. And that's just a shame. You spend that much money on a truck, and you have to live with it. Did you have another question, Rick?
Yeah, Kevin, I had my ECM report also pulled today, and my ECM report is telling me 5.7 as an average, and by my calculations, I'm 6.7 as an average. Am I crazy, or is it possible that ECM could be off?
I've seen ECMs, and that's about the limit. I mean, I see them off about a mile per gallon at their worst. Some ECMs are pretty accurate. Some are as far as a mile per gallon off. One of the things that tends to throw them all off is idling. They just don't seem to register fuel flow very well at idle. So that can throw it off, but they're notorious for being off when it comes to real fuel mileage. That's why I tell people not to go by that. The only thing we use it for is if you've got an instant readout on the dash, and you can use it to kind of change your driving habits. But again, the turbo boost gauge and the pyrometer will do better at that even. Let's go to Oklahoma City. Hugh, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Kevin. Hi, Bruce. How you doing?
Hey, Hugh. How are you?
Well, I did not get Kevin to come out and meet me at 6 o'clock in the morning yesterday.
Oh, you didn't, huh?
Instead, he came out and met me at about 30 minutes after midnight. And he went through my program, and he did make some changes, and what he said was he backed the fuel off a little bit, that it just had way too much fuel going to it, and he probably spent an hour with me, and he got his flashlight out and looked around my engine and made a few notes about what some things I probably should tend to pretty soon, and it was just unbelievable to get that kind of service. And when it came time to pay him, he told me I didn't owe him anything.
Oh, he's going to go out of business if he can continue to do that.
I hear you, but all the things, you know, just from listening to him and talking to him, I just can't imagine there's too many people who would know how to do all that work better than him. So he's probably going to get the job.
Okay.
I'm probably going to be back out there towards the end of the month, and I'm going to try to schedule a day off to where he can take care of all that for me. But that was the greatest. I was about dead because I'd had a long day, but I really, really enjoyed interacting with him and getting his comments about my truck and straightening out my program for me. I haven't been able to run enough fuel through it to give you any numbers, but just already, just by looking at my fuel gauge, my fuel mileage seems to be back plus some. I've been reading this fuel gauge for a year, and I have a pretty good idea of you know, how much fuel I've burned from it. And I'm just not burning any fuel now. So whatever was wrong, I think he may have fixed it.
Fantastic.
Thanks for putting me on to it.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
And by the way, you two probably don't need to work as hard as you do, but we need you to work as hard as you do. So forget about not working hard.
Oh, you know, when I say this industry is addictive, it's not only addictive for owner-operators, it's addictive for people on our side of the fence also.
Yeah, I guess so, especially when you're getting the kind of results you guys are getting and seeing people's smiles. You know, how many people are in a business where they put smiles on people's faces?
Right.
People give you thousands of dollars and smile the whole time.
Well, you know, Hugh, what's amazing is, like, when we're working the Louisville or the Dallas or the Vegas show, and you'll see an owner-operator walking towards you, and he'll be about 20 or 30 feet away, and you'll see the smile come on his face. And you say, oh, this is going to be nice, because you know he's got some of your products, and he's really happy with them. And then that makes us feel good.
Yeah. Okay, I think that's all I got. You guys have a good night.
Okay, you
all
too,
right.
You.
Good stuff. Have a great evening. Let's we are... Yeah.
Gina, the girl that's on the Slice of Life?
Yes.
Did you know that she's been quite successful on a diet going down the highway? She's lost over 75 pounds. Well, she's coaching me now a little bit, and she's coaching Hugh.
Wow.
Yep, I've lost 12 pounds since the CMC.
Oh, wow. It hasn't been that long. That's fantastic. It's amazing, you know, all of the things that go on that week. You know, there's almost 100 people there, and it's four really long days. And you know, I get so wrapped up in what I was doing, and we were filming, and you're busy doing stuff, and later on I hear all the little stories of what was going on and people who met each other, and now they stay in touch, and it's just we'll continue to hear these stories for another year. It's just amazing.
Right. Okay.
Let's go to Idaho. Mike, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hey, I got a question for Bruce.
Okay.
But I was wanting to know what makes the 6NZ so much better than the 1LW.
1LW is a 40-pin. Am I correct? Is that a 40-pin ECM?
Okay.
What year is that, a 99 or 98?
Well, I have a 98, I have a 99. My 98 has a 6NZ now because... the 1LW broke the crank in it, ruined the block, so had to start all over anyways, come up with a 6NZ and built it up.
The 1LW is a great engine, and one of my favorites is the 5EK Cat, which came out in 94 and 95. But Caterpillar service managers and mechanics keep telling people you do not have to change the crankshaft dampers. And that was the engine that broke most of the cranks, and you were a victim of that. You know, if they would tell people and get their head out of the sky, you know what I wanted to say.
Yeah.
But and realize that these crankshaft dampers do wear out and keep people from breaking those cranks. But now I have absolutely no problems with any of the 95 through 2002 CAT engines. It's 2003
yeah.
when it went downhill drastically for CAT, but then again, it went downhill for everyone because the other people went to EGR. But the one LW is a good engine
for everybody.
Right. But I can tell you this, when a guy calls me and he has a 5EK and he orders a power box and or a turbo or a ported manifold, I know that within a couple of weeks he's going to be calling me back and telling me how much better his engine runs. And of all the CATs, if you get a 5EK, seems to do the best on fuel mileage. But they also had broke the most crankshafts. But I still blame it on the fact that nobody was changing crankshaft dampers.
Yeah, I got a 5EK and a 94 Kenworth W9. So I got a pretty good mix of them with the 5EK, 1LW, and 6NZs.
The 5EK, before Caterpillar started putting the low NOx settings in them, they were the best running ones stock for stock.
Oh, yeah.
But whenever we're building our when we're building the glider kits, we try to go with the newest, and the 2WS and the 6NZ are the 70-pin ECMs and seems to be the one that the people want. But I would have absolutely no problems building a 1LW or a 6TS or a 5EK.
Well, you know, it's a lot like the Detroits, the DDEC 3, DDEC 4. They were all good. They all had their, strong points, and you can deal with any of those. It's just, once we got past 03 and 04, everything just went downhill. Seems like all we can do is just try to get anything beyond that running as good as possible and just hope for the best, but it's never what you really want.
Right. But no, 1LWs are still good engines.
All right, let's go to Utah. Lance, welcome to the program.
Good evening. You guys got 13 days until GATS. You guys have anything special for us to come by and see at your booth?
Yes, but I'm not going to tell you what it is. You have to come by and see it.
Oh, I see how you are.
Well, we'll be there.
By. Oh, well, I'll definitely come by. I'm sure a lot of others will, too.
Okay.
Curious if you had any surprises like last time, but I had another question too. I had called before. I'm in this company truck. It's an 09, got the Cummins ISX in it. They thought the DPF was bad before. It's got right at 230,000. Went to the shop, four or five shops. They couldn't figure it out. Kept acting real sluggish. Finally, a young guy, I call him a kid, but I'm young too. A young guy, fresh out of mechanic diesel school. He knew what it was. It was what he called a crankcase filter. He replaced it. Engine ran like a brand new. We just had another truck, the sister of this truck, in, and he replaced the entire DPF and everything on that truck. He said it was like $6,000 or $7,000, and still doing the exact same thing. Yesterday they replaced that filter, running like new. What is this stupid filter? I've yet to figure it out, and I tried Googling it. What is this thing, and where is it located?
I don't know. I haven't had an ISX DPF in to work on yet, so
I don't know. I figured you'd
isn't this part of Bruce? Isn't this part of the closed crankcase system instead of allowing the blow by out into the atmosphere, they're recirculating the blow by back in, and this they need to filter it because there's so much junk in it. Is that what we're talking about here?
It could be.
I think that the DPF engines are now closed crankcase systems, and the blow-by does not come out of the engine anymore. It recirculates back in, and it sounds like this may be the filter. I tested a system a couple years ago. Somebody had a theory that there was enough oil and unburnt fuel and that kind of stuff in the blow-by that if we brought it back into the intake and cleaned it up, we would reburn it. And, their claim was it would improve fuel mileage. And I was a little skeptical, but I like trying that kind of stuff. I tried it, and there's no change whatsoever in fuel mileage. And then you know, about 6 months after I tested it, they came back and said they figured out all the problems. And I tried it twice, and it didn't do anything. But I think that's part of the new EPA stuff, is that they're not venting the blow-by out of the engine anymore.
Right. Back in, I think it was 1993, I was working in Mexico City with the Mexican government on air pollution and diesel engines, and we had a system back then where the blow-by went through. It almost looked like salmon eggs, these little balls that were coated with oil, and that was supposed to take the oil out of the blow-by, let the oil drain back into the crankcase, and let the blow-by go back into the turbo. And again, we never saw not even a tenth of a mile of a gallon out of that.
Yeah, this was the same idea.
Well, like we went through multiple shops in Cummins to finally get the thing fixed, and it turned out to be this younger guy that, I guess, you know, he's fresh out of school. That's what he learned on. Fixed it right up. I'm wondering how many other people across the country didn't, like our employer did here, and spent thousands of dollars to replace some DPF for a filter.
Yeah. You know what? What we need to do is look at the system and see where it's going back. And it's possible if that air is, depending on where it's going back into the system, if there's some sort of a restriction in there, that may cause the performance problem.
Well, think about this. If the crankcase can't breathe, the oil cannot drain out of the turbo. Yet it's coming in under pressure, but it goes out under gravity. So in that case, it'll push oil out the front, the compressor side, into the charge air cooler, and it'll push it out the turbine side into the exhaust pipe.
Well, now that's interesting, because when the last few times this has happened on here, the turbo starts to whine, and if you look at my exhaust pipe on this 2009, you'll see oil all over that thing.
So then that was the problem. The crankcase wasn't breathing. Changing the filter, let the turbo drain its oil once again. And that's interesting, very interesting. I'm glad you brought that up.
That's exactly what's happening.
I appreciate you guys' time. You guys have a good evening. See you guys at GATS.
All right, Lance.
All right.
Take care.
See you there. Let's go to Arizona. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hi, how's it going tonight, guys?
Good.
This is a question for Bruce. How do you go about correctly sizing a turbo if you're getting away from the factory turbo? You know, I realize it'd be a difference, like, do I run Nebraska all the time or do I run Colorado all the time? You know, mountains versus plains, whatever. But because I know that, you know, most of the turbos that are coming on them from the factory are a one huge compromise. So when you're building the motor, how do you size a turbo to go on it, Bruce?
Okay. All right. What we do and what we have been doing since the days of the big cam engines is you talk to the guy, the owner, about what RPM does he run, what speed does he run, on an average of how much turbo boost is he using, and we know what horsepower we're building it to, but most importantly is where does he spend most of his time? Now, if he's going to be up in the Rockies or in Wyoming and places like that or Flagstaff, then we're going to go one size smaller on the turbine housing. The rule is for every 5,000 feet of elevation, you're supposed to drop down one size on your turbine housing. But we always found that guys that run coast to coast, they're just passing over the mountains, so it's not as critical. But people that are spending time at altitude and starting and stopping and having to start out going up a hill, now it becomes more critical. So we take all that into consideration whenever we're sizing a turbocharger. These other shops, they say, oh, this turbo works great all the time. No, that's not true. That's not true, because you have to look at the truck, the exhaust system, the horsepower being built, how the guy's going to operate it, the weight he's going to haul, and where he's going to spend most of his time. So sometimes I'll start a guy out with one turbo, and I'll say, I want you to run for a week with this turbo, and I'm going to send you another turbo, and I want you to try this. And then you decide which one suits you better. And then send me back the one you're not going to use. on my 95 Dodge Cummins pickup, I carry two spare turbine housings with me. I can change them in a half hour. Whenever the truck is staying up in the Rocky Mountains, I have my 12 square centimeter on. When I'm going to drive over to Utah to snowmobile, I put my 16 square centimeter on, which is 33% larger. When I'm going to drive the truck from Colorado back to Pennsylvania, I go to an 18 square centimeter, which is 50% bigger. But I can change that in a half hour. So I don't expect a guy to get to Denver, stop, pull down his engine, pull his turbo off, change his turbine housing. That's not the real world.
Yeah, I understand that. Well, have you guys come up with anything for the DDEC 5 Detroits where
you can
put a different turbo on it?
That is a variable geometry turbo, just like the ISX has, and there's no way to change that at this time.
Okay.
So, now when you have a variable geometry, a VG turbo, you have to live with it. But they're not bad turbos when they work because they do give you a lot of boost soon, and then they open the vanes in the turbine housing and lowers the boost and lowers the back pressure in the engine whenever it's going down the highway. And then when you put the Jake brake on, it closes. The problem is it also closes when the EGR valve opens. So, and it's a very expensive turbo. When the time comes and we're able to take off the DDEC 5 EGR, then we'll be getting away from that turbo and getting down to a non-VG turbo and a much more affordable turbo.
All right. Well, I appreciate your answer.
You're quite welcome.
All right. Thanks for the call. Hey, you know, Bruce, all the changes we've seen in the turbo over the years with wastegates and VGTs, and it was interesting to see on the DD15 they went back to a very, very simple turbo. No wastegate, no VGT.
Yeah, but it's got that other shaft that runs in on the gear on the flywheel.
The turbo compounding.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is, you know, they claim giving horsepower, lost horsepower back to the engine.
Yeah, but they're only saying the DD15 does, 3% better than a DDEC 5? All that stuff for 3%?
Yeah. You know, the 2010 now with the SCR, which is, you know, we're just barely starting to get some results back on that. The slice of life drivers all have the newest technology with the diesel exhaust fluid. We were talking to Henry the other night, and he's pushing 9 out of his.
Yeah, Henry's good, though.
Yeah, well, Henry is good. Henry really spec'd that truck well. He's got the single drive axle on it. He's got, you know, all the right stuff. And he's pushing 9, and it's not even anywhere near broke in yet. But pretty interesting. All right, I still see hands up everywhere here, so I'm going to try to figure out where we were on the calls. Let's go to Kansas. Matt, welcome to the program.
How you doing tonight, gentlemen?
Doing great, good.
I just have a really quick question in the market for a truck, and I just wanted to know what the procedure was and approximately how much it costs to add Jake brakes to a system, if it's even possible. You know, ISX, just a ballpark figure of what I'm looking at and what's involved in adding Jake brakes to a non-Jake brake engine.
Are you looking at a truck that does not have a Jake brake?
That's correct, yeah. It's got good specs and everything, and, you know, I'm not going to buy it just because of that. But, you know, in future, do I rule out trucks that don't have Jake brakes? I like the Jake brake because, you know, it's just an added safety feature, and I just wanted to know if a truck was, you know, perfect, you know, with the specs and everything came back okay, how much would it be to add Jake brakes?
Okay, let me say this. I don't know what the Jake would cost for the ISX. I can tell you years ago it used to cost us about $1,500 to put one on a big cam. So I would say today to put one on an ISX, it's probably $2,500 or maybe a little bit more. And that is just an absolute guess. fact, I thought they were all coming with Jake brakes. And
I was
personally
would say it has to be so unusual now to see a Class 8 without a Jake brake. I don't know that I've seen that ever on an ISX.
Well, there was on a. I'm more interested in a Detroit, I think. But there was this 03 Century with a D-deck, no Jake brakes, however.
If you're looking at a very specific truck and you absolutely want that truck, then it may be worth pricing it. But I can tell you, it is so unusual to find one without a Jake brake that if you're just in the market and you're worried about finding one and not having a Jake brake, I wouldn't worry about it. I mean, you came across a really unusual truck, I think. I've looked at a lot of trucks, and I can't remember in the last 10 years probably finding many without. I used to spec my trucks without a Jake because I just didn't need it. I ran Florida and Georgia. Just didn't make sense really to have it. It wasn't worth the cost and everything else. And I could have swore that I'm trying to remember which engine that it was that I ordered, it wasn't even an option not to have it.
Yeah, I mean, I still like it for going down an exit ramp.
Trailer brakes work good for that, too. They're the companies.
Kevin, say it ain't so.
You didn't. Okay. Well, they say if you live a straight life in a crooked road, you're going to get eaten. So,
all right, guys, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All right, thanks for the call. Let's see. We are off to Charles in Pennsylvania. Welcome to the program.
Hey, gentlemen, how you doing tonight?
Good.
Good. Kevin, I called you, I guess, about 2 weeks ago, and I was telling you that I was going through starters. I burned up like 3 or 4 different starters since November, and I took it into the shop, and they couldn't find anything. They looked at it for about an hour, and they couldn't find anything. But while I was there, I had my charge air cooler tested, and it was leaking so bad that it really wasn't even holding any pressure. So I put a Duralite on here on Monday. And so far, the fuel mileage is increasing on the dash anyway. I'm at about 6.6 when I was usually at about 5.9. Now, my question to you is this, is that I have a 60 Series 515 Detroit with 342 rears and a 13-speed transmission, and how should I drive this truck? At what RPM should I drive it? And how fast should I drive it? And what else you think I can do to try to improve my fuel mileage?
Okay. You know, we talk a lot about sweet spot and RPM and that kind of stuff, but speed is still the most critical factor. I mean, if we want the very best fuel mileage we can get, we drive the truck as slow as we can drive it, keeping in mind that we want to watch RPM. And sometimes, depending on gear ratios and tire size and where you are, sometimes we drop a gear or a half a gear in order to run. You know, if we can drive a truck down the road all day long at 55 miles an hour and keep a reasonable RPM, that is where we're going to get our best fuel mileage. It's not always practical, so you always want to keep that in mind, is slower is better. And then, you know, the things we talk about with watching turbo boost and pyrometer. And every truck is a little bit different. So as you start to watch that stuff and you tweak and you get your results back, you'll start to see. But keep in mind, slower is better. That engine, you know, really doesn't like to run much under 13. If you're really light, you're on the level, you know, and you're not pulling hard, you can let it cruise along at 1250. But as you start to approach any kind of a pull, you want to bring it back up into the 1350, 1400 range. So,
okay,
you know, play around with some of those things. Hey, Bruce, other than, I mean, he went through, what, 3 new starters, not remand, and all I could think of was some sort of an electrical problem. Do you know anything else that could cause that many starters to go bad in a short period of time?
Oh man, I tell you, I would add some extra ground wires. That's the first thing I would do. But I was just thinking, what is causing that? And I think I'd be on the phone with some of the engineers at Delco or Lease Neville or whoever's starters you're using, and talk to them about it. I'd call various good Detroit shops like W.W. Williams in Hubbard, Ohio, and speak to Paul Bubb. But that's amazing. Other items to do for on that truck for fuel mileage is our straight-through mufflers, the ported jet hot-coated exhaust manifold, and the fast fuel system. Those three items right there should give you 3/4 of a mile to the gallon.
Okay. Wow. And what was the name of the mufflers on there again, you said?
We have several different straight-through mufflers, performance mufflers build for on that truck. And also the ported jet hot coated manifold will lower your exhaust temperature by 125 degrees and give you 1/4 mile to the gallon. The fast fuel system's good for about 1/4 mile to the gallon. The muffler's 1/4 mile to the gallon.
And when you've got them on, you're going to fall in love with your truck again.
Is that right?
It lets the truck run more free. You push less on the pedal. The response improves.
Okay. What's the phone number out there at Pittsburgh Power so I can give you guys a call? 724-360-4080. Okay. And I can just talk to anybody or ask for you?
No, just talk to anybody. It's pretty hard to get me on the phone sometimes.
I can imagine. Okay, I just got one more question. How do you control that turbo? Because I don't know what a pyrometer is. And how do you control the turbo as you're going up the hill? I try to keep it around 28 on this. 28
pound of turbo boost?
Try to anyway, yeah. But
well, that's all right. You know,
I try to keep it around there, but I'm usually around between 75,000 to 77,000 pounds. I'm on an average.
Yeah,
and
well, that's okay. In 1/4 mile before you get to the hill, if it's a small rolling hill, you want to be rolling into the throttle. And if it's a long drawn out hill, I'd start accelerating 1 mile before, and I'd get my speed built up. And I don't mind using turbo boost in that situation. And turbo boost, pick whatever it's going to take for boost to keep you at a reasonable speed to go over the hill, always having throttle left. So you should always be able to accelerate. Have your RPMs up and have your power up when you get into the hill. And then as you start to ease over the top, you back out of it and you coast on down the other side. And then you behave yourself on the level and on the downhill side. That's where you make your fuel mileage. But going uphill, you're making 1 mile to 1.5 miles to the gallon. So the
okay.
sooner you, or we should say per minute. You're burning so many gallon per minute, so the sooner you get over, the sooner you start to save fuel. So you have to use power to get up and over.
Gotcha.
But always have it so you have power left over.
Okay.
If you have your RPMs up a little bit and your power up, that way you kept your heat down. It sounds like you have a boost gauge, but you don't have a pyrometer, so if you come by the shop, we'll install a pyrometer for you, and then you can compare the two to find the sweet spot for pulling the hills.
Okay. And where are you guys located? Because I don't get out much. I'm East Coast, and that's where I stay pretty much. But
we are 35 miles north of Pittsburgh. If you get off the Pennsylvania Turnpike at exit 38, forget what it is. It's old exit number 4, but it's Route 8, and you go north for 8 miles and then east on 228 for 4 miles. You come right to our place. But you call me someday, and we'll talk, and we can either send the parts to you or you can come on by. Where do you live in PA?
Uh-oh. I don't think we Yeah, I think we actually I was switching calls, but I went back to them there. We're running out of time, so we are going to get to South Carolina. Rico, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, good evening, Bruce and Lisa and Kevin. Thank you guys for all that you do.
Well, thank you.
Got three quick questions. I'm in the market trying to shop for a truck. I'm decided I'm going to go ahead and take the plunge and get my own, start my own company. I wanted to know about gear ratios. What should I be looking for? I know I need to stay between a 98 and a 2003. But what gear ratio should I be definitely looking for? I know the 264 are what Kevin normally recommends, but it's kind of hard to find those. And
okay, I'll give you a suggestion. If you can't get the 264s, then do not buy 336s. Okay, get a 355s or 370s, but no 336s.
I agree.
355 or 370.
I agree.
Okay. And truck, the engine, as far as, I know that Detroit, I know Kevin likes the Detroit, longer life. I heard that the ISX doesn't get it as long a life before you have to have an in-frame. Which engine do you guys recommend as far as, you know, fuel economy and also performance as well?
Well, we both really like the D-Deck 4, and I have no problems with the Cats 2002 and older. And I certainly don't have any problems with any of the Cummins engines either. So,
okay, within that year range of the 96 to 03, so any of them will basically work as far as fuel mileage and power.
Right.
Okay.
I might have a really nice 2000 Peterbilt with a. We just put $32,000 into the D-Deck 4 Detroit. Transmission was just redone, new clutch, everything on the engine, new radiator, new charge air cooler. Unfortunately, the husband and wife team went through a divorce while we had the truck, and now the courts have it tied up. But I'm going to give them an ultimatum here in the next couple weeks to get me the title so I can get this sold so I can get paid.
What model Peterbilt, Bruce?
379.
I'm a little bit more fun. I love the Peterbilt. I love the aerodynamic Peterbilt, but I can't. I had took a lot of those off my list because I couldn't find the Detroit in those Peterbilt.
So I kind of
eliminated it from the list, but I guess now, given the information that you gave me now, I can maybe put some of those back on the list. That's actually my favorite style of truck, that Peterbilt that you're talking about. Okay, I think that answers pretty much all my questions. Thanks again, you guys.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. Let's go to Jerry in Illinois. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. I don't usually listen to this conference call, and I can't believe I've got a question that probably Bruce can answer, so it's worked out pretty good. I talked to Bruce several times, and I've got an 06 ISX, and he finally prompted me to put the EGR in test mode, and I had, I think it was Tuesday night, I started out with a load, and I did not have any turbo boost. My exhaust gas temperature was quite a bit higher, so I called ahead and pulled into my Cummins shop, and they determined that it was an exhaust gas pressure sensor was bad. They put it in, that cured the problem. However, before I got to the Cummins shop, I plugged the EGR valve back in so that it wouldn't cause any problems with the servicemen at the shop. I have also plugged the tube where it goes into the intake manifold. What's the implications if I just leave the EGR valve hooked up with that tube plug? Does it hurt anything?
Well, I know under the Detroit they have sensors there to sense flow. On the ISX, I don't think they have a sensor to detect flow, so you may be okay. Do you have the tube plugged now?
Yes. Yeah, I let the tube. I clandestinely plugged it so that you can't really tell it is plugged, so I left that in and just took the bubble back up.
has anything changed so far?
Well, I just ran it that night and then unplugged it again, but I got to thinking, you know, with that tube plug, well, I mean, what the, where's the exhaust gas going to go? Is it going to back up and hurt anything, or,
no,
you know?
No, no. No, I'd leave it plugged. You had no check engine light?
Right, that is correct. When I plugged it back in, the check engine light went away.
Okay, and you plugged the tube. Well, that's interesting. You might have come up with something there.
Well, it was really
easy. You know, Bruce, on the Mercedes, there are some people on the website who took a didn't completely close off the tube. Reg started playing around with plugging the tube and then drilling holes through the plug until he got down to the smallest hole that wouldn't throw a code or derate the engine. And I think he's down to like a quarter-inch hole is all he's allowing through. The engine doesn't derate. There's no no check engine light. And he said there's a noticeable improvement on the Mercedes in performance and fuel mileage.
Good. That's good.
Any derate or anything with the tube completely plugged, that's never been a problem.
Yeah, if it's not derating and you have no check engine light, that may be a way to go on that one.
Yeah. That's certainly a more economical alternative than trying to take everything off.
Yeah, it is, and it was so simple to do. You've just got a hose that hooks the two tubes together right at the intake manifold. If you take a piece of solid shaft and cut it about an inch long, and I don't remember the exact diameter size, just put it in there, and I put a clamp around it so it wouldn't vibrate or anything, but you don't know it's there, and, you know, it's pretty clandestine.
Like that big tube that comes around from the back that has that insulation on it, that has that big nut, that's the tube that brings your EGR back.
Correct, but it's hooked to the intake manifold with a piece of hose on mine. Is that right? There's
one that I saw have a big nut. Looks like about an inch and a quarter, inch and a half nut.
Well, you sure that's not the intake or the compressor intake? Because it's...
No, the compressor intake's right behind that.
Okay. No, mine has a hose. There's a nipple coming out of the intake manifold, and then there's a pipe that comes around the back of the motor, and they're hooked together with a hose, and there's about an inch gap between the end of the nipples, and I just cut a piece of solid shaft, I think 2 inches or 2.5 or something, an inch long, and just put it right in there between the ends of the tubes. That's what I did, anyway.
I'll take a look at that. I'll have to start looking at more of those.
Now, the other thing I did do, and I don't know whether I should have done this or not, but with it plugged off, I really don't give a damn, is that if the fitting that goes up into the intake manifold that lets the exhaust gas in, it's got an elbow and makes a venturi. It's kind of pointed.
Mm-hmm.
I took that fitting out and cut that tube off level so that there would be no restriction, so that it wouldn't be there restricting the intake.
Right, I'd do that too.
Yeah, and then I just bolted that piece back on there and put my plug in and went down the road. But I did that after I'd unplugged the EGR valve. That was just kind of a safety measure to be sure nothing ever seeped over into there.
Mm-hmm.
But then last night, or the other night when I hooked that valve back up again to avoid the confusion at the shop, then I got thinking, well, what's it going to hurt? I went ahead and unplugged it the next morning, but I wanted to ask you what you thought it would hurt just to leave it plugged back in and let it operate. But
can you get by our shop? Do you ever run through Western Pennsylvania?
Yeah, I do. It's I'm usually in a big hurry. I was through that area last week, but you're almost always in a deadline, always in a hurry, you know.
Yeah. Well, I'd like you to give me a call and stop by. I'd like to see that, but I'll start looking at some more of those and see if I can find that hose connection.
Yeah, the ISX certainly seems to be the one that is the least sensitive to messing around with that. On most of the other engines, if the flow is completely cut off, it's like unplugging the EGR. It derates the engine. And on the Mercedes, that's why they played around and they had to allow some flow to get through for the sensors, but they were able to cut enough of it off that They saw some improved performance. Hey, Bruce, we are all out of time. You know what? We've got hands up everywhere. The lines are all full. We've got to do this again soon.
Okay. Let's try to do it during the week sometime and not always on Friday.
Okay. We can do that. Why don't you give out your phone number before we wrap this up?
724-360-4080.
Outstanding. And probably the next time we get to talk will be at Dallas.
Okay, Kevin.
It's coming up quick. Good to talk to you again, and we'll see you soon.
As always, it's my pleasure.
All right. Thanks, everybody. The live show's coming up on SiriusXM in 30 minutes. Be safe, be profitable, be responsible, and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.